Record. All right, guys. It is Friday the 13th of December 2024. Friday the 13th for those of you who are superstitious. And that makes this Pete, what's the number?
255. Crank it in, Robert. Crank it in, Ralph.
Crank it in, guys. Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Pete. Good
Good
morning to
morning.
all of those Potter Solder Smoke listeners. First of all, happy holidays to all. And those of you who are looking at us through the video, the Dean has a Christmas, a festive tie on. I am wearing a really over the top Santa Claus hat. And I say it's over the top because it doesn't fit well when I'm wearing headphones. So those of you who are just listening via the old way, via the audio, you're spared this sad spectacle. Pete, you don't have anything holiday-ish on there.
Well, I was going to wear my red hat too, and then it wouldn't fit over the earphones.
That's it. So Pete took the wise decision not to do this. I'm going to take the hat off right now. That's enough of that. Dean, you keep your tie on since it's harder to remove. There we go.
It's harder to tie since I haven't had to tie a tie in 5 years now,
I know.
so.
I have a closet full of ties. I haven't touched them in 5 years. It's great. Retirement. Okay, so happy holidays. I had on my Santa Claus hat. Dean has on his Christmas tie. But another important date is approaching, and we have to make mention of this right now. December 18th. On December 18th, Pete Giuliano completes another orbit of the sun. Happy birthday, Pete.
Thank you, but I
That's
have a lot of company.
You do. He. This is how I was reminded of the auspicious event, because Pete sent around a blog post with December 18th. Now the dead giveaway was December. So I and there's all kinds of famous people in there. And he said, "What do these people have in common?" So it's like Steven Spielberg, Betty Grable, Joseph Stalin.
Hey, Katie Holmes.
Yeah, Katie Holmes.
I think I
Dia.
know. I think I know. They all homebrew transceivers.
They all built direct
Is
conversion receivers.
that
Unbeknownst to us. Who knew Stalin was down there worried about the bypass filter?
but the hero of that group is Brad Pitt.
Brad
The
Pitt.
guy's mid-60s and he's got a 30-year-old girlfriend. Let's hear it for Brad Pitt. Happy birthday, Brad.
Happy birthday, Brad. There you go. All right. I think we mentioned here just the ham radio workbench. We were joking about it before, because I like the way they do the time. They get everybody ready, like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and all that kind of stuff. It's really kind of very, very cool. But I actually had a really good time over on the ham radio workbench. A great bunch of guys. I enjoyed talking to them. I again apologize for being a bit too harsh when I criticize the idea about rejuvenating old rigs, because there basically the idea of rejuvenation was stuff the old box through full of digital stuff, and it offended my homebrew sensibilities. So I said, nah, I kind of, and I was harsh in my criticism. I apologize, but I made up for it by going down there. Now I may have caused trouble again, because as I was talking to these guys on the ham radio workbench, it occurred to me that this is the group of people that should be building the high school direct conversion receivers. They should really build one. They have the workbenches, they have the tools, they have a lot of technical expertise. So this led to a challenge that we threw down in the last podcast. And that was 1 month ago. And the gauntlet was thrown down. I challenged the ham radio workbench guys to build the high school direct conversion receiver that we've been talking about, sort of ad infinitum, ad nauseum, on the podcast and on the blog. I'm happy to report that our challenge has been graciously accepted. Those guys are gracious. Gracious is the word that describes the ham radio workbench crew. And they have picked it up, and we've been getting emails from them with questions about how to build the thing and what to do with the thing and everything else. And so that's really good news. And we look forward to the completion of at least one direct conversion. What do you think, Dean? You've been watching it kind of closely. What do you think?
I think we're going to get at least one, maybe two. I'm hoping for five or six, but we hope for 15 with the high
We
schoolers.
got zero. Zero for 15. Yes.
Well, we got some that were completed. They just never put antennas up.
I
So.
know, I know, I know. We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about the antenna stuff. But listen, we're now going to extend the challenge. We're going to expand the range of the challenge. And now we are challenging everyone out there who is in the solder smoke listening in community, podcast, video cast, blog post. Take you have to accept the challenge. You too should build the direct conversion receiver that we've been talking about. Now it's very simple. It's four stages of bandpass filter. There's a permeability tuned oscillator kind of thing with a screw that goes in and out, so you don't have to buy an expensive variable capacitor. There's a diode ring mixer, and there's a really simple audio amplifier. Those four stages. Those are the four stages that Farhan talks about as being the kind of the essential stages in ham radio equipment. Now, if you build this thing, you will end up with an extremely useful device. Now, I've done a couple of podcasts, a couple of videos on YouTube in the last few weeks that talk about that demonstrate how useful this receiver is, how it is not a toy. It is a real receiver. You can listen to real conversations on CW. You can listen to real conversations on single sideband. You could even plug it into the computer and decode FT8, as Dean has pointed out. So it's not a toy. It's a serious receiver. And here's the thing: if you build one of these things, you will never again have to hang your head in shame when somebody mentions appliance operators, because you will not be one of them. You will have done something that has been for many decades considered too difficult for a radio amateur, and that is build a receiver. For years, QST and the ARRL was putting out the line that well, no, you could build a transmitter, but a receiver, you really need to go for the commercial gear. And that's just not true. And I think this receiver demonstrates it. So home brewing, as we always say, it's not for the faint of heart. It's not easy. You guys know it's not easy. There's ups and
No.
downs.
No, and Bill, I'm going to make it even easier because I'm going to invite everybody to build along with KK4DAS.
There
Build
you go. There you go.
a
That's what.
receiver with solder smoke. We're going to start in January. I'll do an overview of the architecture. I'll give you the bill of materials so you know what you need to
A
get.
bomb. He's going to give a
A
bomb.
bomb. I'm going to give you
Boom.
the
Boom
bomb.
with the
I'm going to
bomb.
tell you where to get all the parts. I'm going to talk about the 3D printing needed for the permeability tuned oscillator. And then we're going to build one small board a week for about 4 weeks. And at the end of those 4 weeks, you're going to have built a 40 meter direct conversion receiver.
Dean, let
So.
me ask you this. Will you personally appear in the shacks of the builders and help them place the parts on the boards? Because I think if you fail to do that, you will not be doing enough.
I cannot reach through the Zoom monitor to do that, but I will provide all of the help and answer all of the questions that you may have. We get lots of questions. We get
Lot of
questions
questions. We do. We get a
about
lot of
why
questions.
we designed the circuits the way we did. And all I will say is if you're going to take this on, the first and really only rule is build to the design first.
That's
You
right.
may have lots of ideas about how to make it better, how to remove buzz or hiss or make it tune easier or a different audio amplifier. But if you want to be successful, build to the design first. Then you have a platform that you can experiment with and you
Well,
can play all you want.
we actually did a document on mods that you could make to the receiver or suggested mods, but it was based on the assumption that someone will have built the receiver first and then do the mods. Dean is talking about something that we hear, and I'm sure Pete hears this all the time. We get guys who write into us and say things like, "I'm going to build your receiver, but I'm going to build it for 12 meters. I'm going to use a bandpass filter of my own design. The oscillator, I don't like that screw thing, so I'm going to use an SI5351. For the mixer, diode rings, it just seems so hard. So I'm gonna go with an ADE1. And for the audio amplifier, well, I'm just gonna throw an LM386 board in there. But it's gonna be your receiver. So can you help me with this, please? And then wait. When it doesn't work, they come back to Dean, especially the Dean, and they say, and Pete has heard this too, your design stinks. It doesn't work. So we want to avoid that, fellas.
It is true.
So just build it the first time to the way we built it. Anyway, thank
Hey,
you.
Bill, there's one postscript here, and I want to make sure that people understand this. And that postscript is, once you build it, you're in for a listening experience like you've never had before. When you listen to it, it's nothing but pure audio. I mean, you have to listen to it and you say, this is amazing. I mean, there's just something about a direct conversion receiver. And I think once you build it and listen to it, it'll convince you it's worth the effort.
Yeah, I think you're right, Pete. You know, when I did the last video, you know, I've been doing sort of band scans with this receiver, but I've been doing it in the early morning because I'm usually in the shack in the early morning. But the other day I said to myself, well, let me try to do one in the evening. So I did it at not at 5 o'clock in the morning, but at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And 40 was just popping. I mean, there was from the top of the band all the way down to the bottom, from 7.3 all the way down to 7.0 megahertz. There were signals in there. And I just tuned, I went from the top to the bottom and from the bottom to the top. And we monitored, you know, 5, 6, 7 SSB contacts, several CW contacts, all these different contacts we heard. And, you know, I made the video. It's about 12 minutes long, and I posted it on there, and I just said evening band scan with the direct conversion receiver. You know, but a very accomplished and experienced home brewer, Mike WN2A, wrote to me, and he said, you know, he actually asked a sincere question. He says, did you have any external amplification in that thing? Because it just sounds so good. And I said, no. I said, Mike, there's nothing. I just plugged the speaker into the speaker jack. It's not an amplified speaker. It's just a speaker. But it sounds that good. It's good and it's stable too. I mean, it doesn't drift all over the place. It's great. It's a wonderful little receiver. And again, I think the main thing is it'll give you the experience of having built something. You know, one thing we point out, we usually tell people that they should build a transmitter first and then move on to the receiver. But if you build this receiver in the sequence you describe, you will be doing that because the first stage that they build is the permeability tuned oscillator. So you will be building an oscillator that puts out a signal on 7 megahertz, 7.3 megahertz.
In fact, our test that we've built the oscillator is going to be to have a shortwave receiver nearby and listen to the oscillator beep and squeal as we tune up and down through 40 meters.
JOO and JVO, joy of oscillation, the joy of variable oscillation. All right, so good. But anyway, we point out that it is a challenge, and you should accept the challenge. Really, you know, it's not easy. It's easier just to pull out the credit card and get, you know, have Amazon leave something on your front steps in a couple of days. But that's not what we're talking about. There will be mistakes. You will build things wrong. You will get the wrong part. You will wire it up incorrectly. You will check it 3 times and still wire it up incorrectly. You'll discover errors in the schematic, usually my fault. And then you, because, but if you understand the circuitry, you'll be able to say, wait a second, is that capacitor supposed to be connected there or not? And you'll realize, oh no, I got to do it. That's one of the benefits of using a really simple schematic, and this is simple, very very simple, but just accept the fact that you know success is not guaranteed. You know, you there will be setbacks, but you just have to kind of roll with the punches and realize that's part of the game. Pete, what you I'm sure you have some thoughts on this, Pete. You've been doing this
Oh
a long
yeah,
time.
I just listening here, I'm totally amazed. As a matter of fact, when you were mentioning about listening to the signals, I have a YouTube video of the DCR project that appeared in Sprat, used the MC1496, which is a little more complex than what you and Dean are suggesting be built. But there was a QSO between Japan and Canada, And it was like, I'm talking to you here now. I'm saying this thing is really sensitive. I mean, it'll pick up those signals and it just sounds so good. And you would have, if you closed your eyes, you said that's not a direct conversion receiver because it can't be because it sounds so good. And so I think that's a, you're in for a real experience. So once you do that, you'll never think about a regen again.
That's it. No, I mean, it's yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right. So that is the challenge. We hope more people will accept it. People are doing it. We have already seen a number of people doing it. I put out a question last time, and this is a kind of a delicate point because it deals with somebody who is really revered in our part of the hobby, and that's Doug Dumas. And it occurred to me, did Doug Dumas ever build an SSB transceiver? Does anybody have any recollection, or can anybody point to an article in 73 or CQ or QST by Doug Dumas in which he describes his build of an SSB transceiver? And I have received nobody has come back and said, yeah, here's one. No. There are some books that Doug contributed to. For example, he was one of the co-authors in Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur that does have SSB transceivers in it. But I don't think I can find, I don't think any of us can find a single SSB transceiver article. Now, I remember, and somebody else pointed this out to me, that starting in September 85, Doug wrote a five-part series in QST on an SSB transmitter, not transceiver, transmitter. And I have that article, that series of articles here in my files, and I pulled it out, and I noticed that in the very first episode, the very first article, he prefaces it by saying, "Why would anyone build an SSB transmitter today?" That's a question. A question. Yes, it's a very, very appropriate question.
We get that question.
Yes. And then he goes on to say, he says it would be fun, quote, for the experience and understanding that it would provide. In other words, he's just doing this as sort of like a little kind of little intellectual exercise. But you see, he goes on, he sort of implies that he's not designing something that's going to be used. He's just designing something that you're going to build for the experience and understanding that it would provide. The other thing is that it's not a transceiver. So, I hope somebody can point to a transceiver that Doug built, an SSB transceiver, because that would really make him more one of us. But I have a theory. I developed a theory about why we don't see this kind of build and why. Doug seems to have gotten it wrong on sideband inversion so frequently. I mean, many, many times in QST articles and in AWR handbooks, I find Doug just getting it upside down and wrong in terms of when sideband inversion takes place. I think the explanation is that Doug was essentially a CW guy, and almost all the rigs that he produced were for CW. And if you're in a world where CW is what you're building for, you really don't have to worry too much about sideband inversion. If that CW signal is inverted or not, it doesn't matter. It might affect where you place the BFO, but if you get it wrong, if you get it on the opposite side where it's supposed to be, you're still able to hear it, right? Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right.
It could be. He was a CW guy, so sideband inversion did not really matter. With CW, you could get it wrong and still make it work. Whereas if you're on sideband, if you get that wrong, you're going to have the
Wait, wait,
BFO on the
wait,
wrong
wait,
side.
wait, wait, wait,
It's
Donald
going to
Duck.
say you're not going to you're never going to be able to listen. That's it. That's it.
but you could take your CW rig and make it a double sideband receiver. Easy.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. You could. Yeah. Double sideband. Well, Doug, Doug was the one who got me going with double sideband phone, which was my introduction. So he produced Let's Go DSB for QRP in a CQ article, and that's what really set me on the path that the path of the road to perdition that I'm on right now.
And here you are,
Here we are.
having arrived.
Having a ride. All right. So anyway, that's our theory, and we'd like to hear from people about about this. Is this kind of apparent failing on Doug's part resulting from the fact that he is more of a CW guy than a phone guy? Certainly more a CW guy than an SSB guy. Let's hear from that. Pete, you got some stuff to talk about, and you got a cool background there. That looks like a hybrid rig behind you.
Yeah, it is. First up, Bill, I want to say happy birthday to the crew that'll be sharing a birthday this coming Wednesday. So, happy birthday to all those people born on December the 18th. And the list was quite long. I mean, I was kind of surprised to see some of those people I never suspected. I mean, the list also included Ray Liotta, unfortunately, who's passed away as a silent key, but kind of interesting to see. Keith Richards. Rolling Stone. There you go, my man. My man. There you go. Well, I'd like to first start off with a shout out to a guy by the name of Jeff up in the Seattle area. And it's kind of interesting. We first had some communications about some Collins gear. And after a few rounds, he comes back to me and says, "I know who you are." I said, "Uh-oh." He said, "Yeah, you're on Solder Smoke, and I'm a podcast listener." He said, "So I enjoy the show very much." So shout out to Jeff in the Seattle area, and I'm sure he'll be listening to this one. And I did want to recognize that he is a podcast listener. So you never know who's at the other end of a conversation you're going to have. But he did say that he enjoys the podcast very, very much. Well, I had a few things. Unfortunately, my time limitations just don't give me a lot of time to do things that like I'd like to do. I can think about a lot, but not much done. But one I chased, and this is in the arena of troubleshooting. Sometimes the not so obvious, the obvious is not so obvious. And I'm going back to a Christmas present I got from my son Tim. He and his wife brought me a Drake TR3, you know, the tech special. He also brought me the TR7, but there's a story about the TR3 that when I finished graduate school, my wife says, "I think it's time to add to our family." I said, "No, I want a Triumph TR3." And she said, "No, we're going to have a family." I said, "No, I want a Triumph TR3." So we compromised. We had an addition to our family, but my son's initials are TR. So I get a TR. So he remembers that and he spotted the TR3. He says, "Here, you can fix it." Now, I got it working, but it seemed deaf. It just seemed you could hear the signals, but it was like, for instance, I could put on my signal generator. I could hear it, but it was not rock crushing. You know, sitting right next to it, should pin the meter. And I just looked at all the tubes. I tested all the tubes. I looked at all the resistors, looked at all the coupling capacitors, and I just couldn't figure out why. And then I looked at the schematic and something I had been passing over. Drake and their transceivers included a light bulb, a little light bulb and a special bulb, a number 12, that plugs into a little socket. And the reason for the light bulb is lightning protection. So on receive, the light bulb is in the circuit. In case you get a lightning stroke, it blows the bulb and not your radio, which is a good idea. But I just could not understand why. So I pulled the bulb out and I put the bulb back in, and guess what? The receiver came alive. That bulb and those socket pins must have had corrosion, oxidation on them. And it's probably the original bulb. This is a 60-year-old radio. So, I mean, I tried it again, pulled the bulb out, and I could hear the receiver like it normally was. So I said, "This is an open circuit." I tested the bulb. Bulb was good. Put it back in. It came to life. So, I mean, but it was a little item on the schematic and just something. And the way it's set up is the TR relay connects the antenna to the light bulb, and then it goes in through the circuit and then goes to a transformer. That's in the plate circuit of the P12BY7 driver. And then there's a pickoff off that transformer that goes to the RF amplifier. So, I mean, done in by a bulb. I mean, I chased my tail in that and never thought about this is the problem.
This is a tale of woe that is very instructive for our listeners, because
Yeah.
this is the kind of things that happen to even the most experienced of builders, which is Pete Giuliano. I mean, if Pete could be done in at least temporarily by a light bulb, by a little tiny light bulb, that's just a lesson for all of us. I mean, that this kind of thing happens. You never reach the point where you think, oh, well, I'm going to get everything right the first time. If you're dealing with older equipment, if you're dealing with homebrew equipment, even if you're dealing with, professionally developed commercial equipment, you're gonna run into these problems.
And I have a suggestion when you run into these problems, which is put down the wire clippers and put down the soldering iron and turn on your brain. Because I was listening to my homebrew rig the other day, and all I was getting was static. And I was crazy. I could not figure it out. Nothing. What could have gone wrong? What could have gone wrong? What could have gone wrong? Turns out, if you don't have an antenna attached to the radio, it doesn't work real
Yeah, I'll do it. I've been in the
But
same kind.
put down the soldering iron.
Yeah, and it also gets to a point where, and we recommend this many times, that if you're really stuck, don't just kind of plow through it, because this gets to the nightmare. Dean has had the nightmare, and I've had the nightmare. It's the home brewer's nightmare, that you're trying to figure out why your homebrew creation doesn't work. So you start removing parts from the board, right? You're thinking, well, could it be this? Could it be that? And in the end, you end up with a completely empty board and a big pile of parts right next to it. That's the nightmare. I've never actually done that in the real world,
Yeah.
but that's where this will all lead if you keep at it. Now, this gets to the point. If you really get stuck, if you think, man, I'm just beating my head against this, take a break, put it on the shelf, walk the dog, take a day, take 2 days. And then at some point during that 2 day period, now this has been confirmed scientifically. At some time when you're thinking about something else, maybe you're in the shower, maybe you're out walking the dog or something, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, I need to hook up the antenna. Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah. Oh, it's the light bulb. Maybe it's that light bulb. Maybe that thing did it. Yeah. But anyway,
Well, the other thing that sort of clouded the issue is the light bulb. They have a cage around the three tubes, the three finals. It's a protective cage. The light bulb is in one corner that you don't always see. I mean, it's not like something you scan over and what could it be? It's just it's not you don't see it visually till you pull the cage cover off and until you look at the schematic. And I just said, well, the only thing it could be, I got an open circuit, especially when I pulled the light bulb, and then I had my signal generator, and the signal didn't change. I mean, whether it was in the socket or out of the socket. And then I looked at the pins, and they were really corroded. So I cleaned them up, put some deoxid in there, and the thing came to life. So sometimes we get fooled. Another fun experience at the N6QW shack is we had the power out.
Oh man.
The power company now has taken Southern California Edison because of what happened up in Northern California when they're leaving the power on created a firestorm. People were killed and it cost them a lot of money in the courts. So now they preemptively shut off the power. So you say we got high winds, we're turning off the power. So the 2 days ago the power was shut off in Ventura County and there was about 54,000 residents that were involved, and 25% of those 12,500 were here in Newberry Park. And my QTH, I was one of the people affected. So you had no idea how long this thing was going to be off, and all sorts of things start happening when you have the power out. I mean, if it's out a couple hours, I was thinking if this was like the day before Thanksgiving, where the refrigerator was chock full of food. And suddenly it's off for 3 days. Guess what? Unless you can get ice in there or come out with some alternative, you're going to be stuck. You're going to have a lot of spoiled food. So the
But Pete, there is a bright shining glasses half full story when the power goes out for ham radio operators.
Oh
There's
yeah,
no noise on the
yeah, no noise in the bed. Yeah, food goes bad, but no noise in the bed.
bands.
But the thing is, really important is to keep your cell phone charged all the time, keep your laptop charged all the time. And suddenly light bulb went on and I said, I can tether my laptop to my cell phone So the cell service was still on, so I could get on the internet, not long enough to watch Netflix movies, but enough to send me emails and, alert people that, hey, I'm okay. But really important, flashlights, having some flashlights around the house and fresh batteries. So it's a good idea to keep that stuff in stock. I do have one thing. I have a USB power pack that's for charging cell phones. That was charged up, so I could recharge my cell phone. And then when I went over to the board and care, they weren't affected by the power. So I brought everything over there and I got it all charged. Got all my phones charged, got the battery charged and what have you. So it was set. But it was kind of, I mean, you're sitting in the dark there. The other thing, too, is Southern California has been experiencing a thing where it'll be like 70 during the day. But as soon as that sun goes down, gets about 52. And unless you have a fireplace and wood and what have you, you're kind of stuck on what you can do.
Oh,
And
I'm sorry, Pete, but it's 27 here right now.
oh, okay.
The East Coast and Northern contingent calls that California cold, Pete. I'm sorry.
Hey, but listen, I want to mention something because Pete mentioned something here. And this is another benefit of listening to the Ham Radio Workbench, which I recommend. And I had fun talking to them, and I've been listening to them more afterwards. Thomas. K4SWL is on there, and Thomas was in the town in western North Carolina that got whacked by the hurricane really bad, and he was there. One of the things that he sort of looked back on the experience and what he thinks is useful to do or not to do if you're kind of worried about that kind of scenario. And Pete, you're definitely in that scenario right now. One of the things that Thomas recommended was having in your ham shack a big high capacity battery just sitting there. Keep it trickle charge it all the time. You don't necessarily have to hook it up to solar panels or anything like that, but just keep the thing charged up. They're selling batteries on Amazon right now that are 12 volts, 100 amp hours. That's a lot. 100 amp hours? Holy cow, you could run that DC receiver over there for years on 100 amp hours. We were talking about how much it would cost, and I went to Amazon and they're selling these things for like $150, $160. It's lithium ion phosphate. It's the new technology. And man, 100 amp hours, that's really, really pretty cool. Now, Thomas had the advantage that he had solar panels on the roof that he used during the crisis to kind of keep the system charged. But he joked, he talked about how he appointed one of his daughters as the sort of the empress of charge and of current draw. So this sort of limited his ability to fire up his soldering iron because it would pull a lot of current, but and use a lot of kilowatt hours. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting, and I might actually be in the market for a larger battery of 100 amp hours or so. That'd be kind of good to have, because he points out you could run almost all the electronics in your shack, with the exception of that Heathkit SB220 linear amplifier or whatever. But you could also put lighting in the shack. And one thing I did was in this area, I think I mentioned it here on podcast, so I went and got a little inverter, a little 12 volt to 120 inverter. And what I do is, if there's on the odd occasion where we have a blackout, I just pull a Honda Accord up on the driveway and I put this inverter across the battery terminals. I leave the Honda Accord on and it produces about 1 kilowatt of 120 volt AC juice, which is enough to run a small air conditioner in the summer. It's enough to keep the
Coffee
TV
pot.
on. Oh, yeah, but keep that coffee pot going. So, anyway, a lot of things you can do. But, Pete, one thing I want to mention, Pete, you're quite the cook. This is another area of talent, and I've got links up to Pete's Pasta Pete website, and his connections between how to homebrew Thanksgiving. That's on there too. We got a nice message from Tony Fishpool over in the UK. He always marveled at how much food we Americans consume on Thanksgiving Day. It's a marvel, yeah.
I had one more item, and that's the picture behind me.
Oh man, the hybrid. Look at that.
A
Look at that.
hybrid.
Look at that thermotron there in the center. That is really cool.
So let me just share a little bit of work on that. With the solid state devices that I have on the hybrid, I can get about 6 watts PEP, and I can hit the SDR receive site up in Half Moon Bay, which is about 300 miles from here, which is okay. But 6 watts is still a little marginal for consistent communications. I mean, I've worked up into Canada with it, and out to the Midwest. I worked out to Ohio, so I said, it would be nicer to have about 20 watts. 20 watts would be a better number. And I also have in the back of my mind one of the CCI amps, the AN758, is a 300 watt amp. It needs 20 watts of drive. So I said, okay, I could maybe make this a 300 watt transceiver downstream and get one of those CCI amps. They're about the same price as the AN762. So I said, but I need to develop a final. So I settled on using a 12DQ7 because I got a bunch of them, and it's 12DQ7 is related to the 12BY7, so that's the driver tube. And then the final is a 12GE5, and the reason for the 12GE5 is it's the 12 volt version of the 6GE5, and a pair of the 6GE5s are in the Heathkit single band transceivers that put out 100 watts. So you could. If you put enough juice on the plate of that, you could actually get a 50 watts out of that final. But the 6GE5 and 12GE5 specifically are designed for lower plate voltage. They works really well around 300 volts on the plate. So based on my calculations, I think you can get about 20 watts out of this thing, and I'm looking forward to it. It's got a couple innovations. I'm trying to do no tune here. So between the 12DQ7 driver and this 12GE5, I'm putting a bandpass coupler. And I've used a bandpass coupler before. As a matter of fact, there's a RCA Ham Tips 1953 article that shows a bandpass coupler that they have, so that essentially you tune the VFO and the transmitter will work at any frequency. So that's been done before, so I'm going to use that principle. But it was quite interesting to use LTSpice to simulate these networks. Normally on LTSpice, what do we look for? 50 ohms. We're not dealing with 50 ohms with the plate circuits of these of the transmit tubes. So now you got to adjust the network so that it'll work with on the plate side, and then it'll work on the grid side of the other final tube. And they're not 50 ohms, so you have to make some adjustments. It was some fun doing that with LTSpice. And so essentially, I have the bandpass coupler coils built, and I've tested that with LTSpice. Now I got to test it in the hardware. And then on the 12GE5, again, no tune, I'm using my favorite new device, the FT8243. So it's the RF choke, and I'm coupling off the RF choke and then to the W3NQN low pass filter. So I had to make some adjustments of how you get from the high impedance of the tube to the low impedance of the low pass filter, and I've got that. Now I discovered something here. I said I'm going to need something more than a chip capacitor because this is running a little more power than just 4 or 5 watts. And have you ever used the polypropylene capacitors?
I may have. Dean says Dean looks like he has.
The polypropylene, surprising, says they're exceptionally good for RF circuits. They're very stable, so I'm gonna try one here. Polypropylene, you get them from DigiKey, and they're in the right values. I looked at a silver mica 330 picofarad capacitor, and they're $3. So I said, man, I'm not spending that. But the polypropylene. Coming in 330, and would you use two of those to get 660, and couple those with the capacitors in the three W3NQN are 430, 660, 660, 430, and across the center coil is 100. And they say the polypropylene are exceptionally good for RF circuits, so we're going to test them. But I've never used them before.
Hey, Dean, did the
I used him in the restoration of a Zenith AM/FM receiver, a commercial receiver, a very early AM/FM receiver that I restored.
I think
Yeah.
Farhan was using polypropylene caps, instead of the NP zeros that we use in the frequency determining elements of some of the capacitor, some of the VFOs that he was building. In other words, our instinct is always to go with NP zero or COG zero caps in those areas. But I think he found that the polypropylene caps were just as stable, just as good. So he went with those.
So I'm gonna make a run on that. So anyway, we're getting to the point where we're gonna start doing some wiring here. I've got the circuit simulated and I'm kind of satisfied with what they do. It was really interesting to see the bandpass coupler. I was able to get it flat from 7.0 to 7300, and with a nice roll off on the side. So we're gonna see how that works in practice, and that's using. I think it's 15,000, 18,000 ohms is the plate resistance of the 12DQ7, and you got to go down to 15, what have you. So we're going to be plowing some new grounds here. I'm kind of excited about it. But again, it's a very slow procedure and process because I can only put a little bit of time each day, and you get to the point you say I got to stop. You know, it drives you nuts. Oh, yeah, you had another 20 minutes. So one other little experience I had here, which is kind of fascinating, and you wonder why people do stuff like this, because someone didn't think about long term what would happen. And part of the reason why I was mentioning Jeff is I had a problem with my KWM2. The KWM2 has a switch up in the upper left-hand corner. The switch says off, on. Noise blanker calibrate. It's a four position switch. And in position zero, essentially where it's off, to position one, where it says on, they've got actually two switches. They have what we normally think is a band switch, you know, the wafer type band switch. But they got a shaft coming out the back, and that's coupled to a snap switch, you know, like the volume controls that have the on off switch on the back.
Right.
Well, they have a shaft that with a bracket that drives this little switch. It's made by the Oak Switch Company, which is no longer in business. This is a common problem with the KWM2. When that thing dies, you're in trouble because you can't get a replacement. Most of these snap action switches are only like 1 amp that are on the back of the pots. This is a 3, and that's marginal, and it would be better to put a 5 or 6 on there. So, what do you do? So, a lot of guys, what they do is just jumper across that switch, and they just take the power cord, plug it into the power bar, and turn the radio on, off and on, or they use the power bar to turn the radio on and off. That's not a very good solution. So I'm working on a little fix here. I saw a way to fix that. What a guy essentially did is built got a coupler, a 1/4 inch to 1/4 inch coupler, and then he build a bracket on the bracket. He puts a pot with the right size. You forget the pot, but it's the switch you want. So I'm working on that, and I'll document that if I get that working and successful. Otherwise, I'm going to have to use the power bar.
Don't use the power bar, Pete. But I'm thinking, I know Dean's thinking this way too. Business opportunity here. You know, you could service the entire KWM2 community in the world, my friend.
Well, some guy actually on the Collins Collectors Association has a fix for this. He essentially is doing what I'm doing, but he used the micro switch. So what he did is he kind of welded an arm onto the shaft, so when you turn it, the arm hits the micro switch.
Pete, you could make dozens of dollars in this thing. Dozens, I'm saying on
But anyway, it's just fun to see some. Sometimes where you have to have an extensive junk box and you have to be able to find the right kind of thing. It was really difficult to find a pot with a 5 amp switch on it.
Oh
Can't
man.
you drill a hole in the case and just put a little toggle
No,
switch in parallel and be done?
well,
he's kind of fond of that KWM2, Dean.
I'm behind the pedals, okay.
Behind the panel, up front. No.
Anyway, I've been drawn enough here, so that's what's happening here at N6QW.
Thank you very much, Pete. Dean has been doing some amazing stuff. He's been traveling, building stuff, launching balloons. Dean, take it over.
Travelogue first. And Pete,
Travelogue first.
I was in your neck of the woods. I was in Ventura, California, just north of Newbury Park for Thanksgiving, and I had the opportunity to see Bezos himself launch a satellite that's going to help Bill get internet when he's in the Dominican
No,
Republic.
it's
And
not Bezos. It's not Bezos, right?
oh, it's not Bezos. It's Elon.
The other
Elon.
one, man. The other
Elon.
one. Holy
The other
cow.
billionaire. God, I got my billionaires mixed up.
You're space guy billionaires too.
Space billionaires. Well, there it is. There's if you're on the video feed, there's the launch of the Falcon 9 as seen from Ventura Beach. This is over the course of about a minute or two.
Wow. From
And
Vandenberg Air Force Base, right?
Vandenberg Air Force Base, about 60 miles north. And that was fun. I've seen other launches, but this was a fun one. We got up at midnight and hear the double sonic boom. Interesting thing about this launch is that it also, in addition to carrying the satellites for the for SpaceX, it had NRO payloads. NRO is the National Reconnaissance Office. They famously used to never be acknowledged as even existing, and they actually publicly announced that they had classified stuff on this thing, which is unusual for them. So that was a really interesting experience. So we had a good time in California. Saw my new granddaughter, who's now 5 months old. That was a lot of fun. Got to play grandparent duty for a while. No radio on that trip, though. Just had a lot of fun with family and friends. So
Very cool. Very cool that you saw the launch there, Dean.
that was the travelogue section. I did get a little bit done before I left. I think I mentioned last time that now I don't have solder smoke south and north. I've got KK4DAS Great Falls and KK4DAS St. Michael's, Maryland on the Eastern Shore. And the Eastern Shore is a townhome. No hex beams there, no external antennas there. So I'm putting a wire antenna in the attic, and I needed a tuner. And I thought, what another opportunity to do things that nobody does anymore, which is build a tuner. So I have been experimenting with a T-Match antenna tuner.
Ooh,
I
nice.
got it up on the display here. I got a couple of big capacitors. I wound my own a coil. I got taps on it for the different bands. I was shocked in multiple ways. First,
And burned.
I was shocked that it actually works. And then I was shocked to realize that when you're transmitting, the capacitors are hot. Because they're just in series, right? You look at these big metal things, you think, boy, they should have a ground somewhere. And like, no, they shouldn't. They're in series because it's a T tuner. And it's like when you're transmitting, they're hot. So the blue tape on this here is to prevent my finger from hitting the capacitor when I'm transmitting and tuning. But I was delighted that it actually
But
worked.
you did hit it once, right?
I did. I got an RF burn, so I have joined the club. So anyway, this is probably not going to be the tuner I use. I actually spent $100 on a little auto tuner kit that I'm going to end up using. But
Dean always makes fun of me because the tuner that I use looks very much like that, and I have it bolted to the carport outside, right?
cobwebs.
There are cobwebs all over it. And not only that, I've found that it discourages band changes during really hot weather or really cold weather.
So the other thing I'm still very active. I'm no longer the president of the Vienna Wireless Society. That honor has gone to Mr. LED himself, Don KM4UDX. We call him Mr. LED because every project he has way more LEDs in it that are actually necessary for the
He
project to work.
is the owner of the MicroBidex of life.
Yes, Frankenbidex, we call it. It is an unrecognizable thing that actually works. So when you look at it, you say, what the heck? It's got a cell phone charger built into it. So, so
Got a
that's my
toaster.
friend, Toaster. Well, I don't know about the toaster. He does, though, will ride around on his e-bike and use the e-bike battery to run it. So Don is a good friend and a great guy, KM4UDX. So shout out to Don. But as part of the Vienna Wireless Society, I'm still running the Makers Group, and we built Pete's simple SSB a couple of years ago. 15 or 16 of us built that transceiver. And you were talking about why would you ever build an SSB transceiver? And when we can buy one. Well, I'll tell you, just last night, just because 40 was so busy. And because I finally got my Shack antenna switches set up and my radio switches set up, I had the SSB, the simple SSB 40 meter, 20 and 40 meter sitting next to my Kenwood, commercial Kenwood that I got from my dad. And I was tuning in. I said, just let me compare how these things sound side by side. And I just tuned into a strong sideband thing. And I tell you, my simple SSB sounds better than the Kenwood. It's got better audio, sounds richer. The Kenwood sounds kind of pinched, and I'm like, all right. And this is about as simple an audio circuit as you can get. It's one transistor and an LM386. That is the audio circuit. And no, I have no buttons or dials for adjusting
What
anything.
about menu 13? Do you go to 4 or do you go to 5?
I have zero menu 13s.
Menus are for restaurants, my friends. Menus are
Menus
for restaurants.
are for so yeah, these homebrew rigs can sound and work just as well as a commercial rig. The other thing that we were talking about earlier is you start with a direct conversion receiver. What can you do with it? Well, I took essentially the same direct conversion receiver that we started with, and I built a 10 meter double sideband transceiver. Now, people will say, all you got to do to go from a receiver to a transceiver is add a couple of boards. And I'm like, oh,
It's like the guys who tell me that, oh, why are you building a direct conversion receiver? You should just throw in a filter and a mixer and a few other stages, and it'll be SSB. It'll be just like an SSB rig. It's so simple.
But I revisited this rig because 10 meters is so wild. I put it on the air the other night and I decided I don't like it. It doesn't sound good. It's got some, it's like sounds like 60 cycle hum in it. It's got an SI 5351 and a display. And when I tune, it clicks. And not because the encoder has detents, it's clicking through the RF. I get tick, 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 tick as I'm tuning. So I'm a year older and a little more mature in my building, and I need to revisit this rig. But the great thing about that rig is I put every board on there. I know how every board works. I can swap out the audio amplifier. I know what to do now. And so it's going to be a lot of fun digging back into that and debugging. And then the last thing is the Vienna Wireless Society is part of the Makers Group. We are undertaking a couple of projects here in the coming year. They're going to be fun. The first one is a Pico balloon. And if you haven't heard of these things, these are balloon launched beacons that run Whisper. There's a open source design called Traquito, like Taquito with a Q, Traquito. Traquito Whisper Pico balloons. And a couple of members of our club have launched these things, and one of them went around the world 5 times. It circumnavigated the globe 5 times. And so we're going to take on as a club project building Traquito Whisper Pico balloons, and we've got the components ordered. And so good news is I have another ham who's going to be leading that project, so I don't have to do the work on that. And that's going to be kind of fun. So stay tuned, and when we get it launched, I will post the details so that you too can follow the trajectory of the Vienna Wireless Society Traquito balloon project as it circumnavigates the globe.
I think we'll have the link to Traquito Whisper Pico Balloon up on the Solder Smoke blog page.
Yeah,
So.
Traquito Whisper Pico balloons. So, and then the second project we're working on is several of our guys have asked to, our members have asked for a new project for us to work on. And we've already built the SSB transceiver. We did a direct conversion receiver. We did last year a power meter and SWR meter. One of our guys, has been very active in building the T41 SDR transceiver, and it's a nice little transceiver. We're not going to build a full SDR transceiver, but we are going to build the front end of an SDR receiver. And I'll put the block diagram up here. And the front end of an SDR receiver looks a whole lot like a direct conversion receiver. You take RF in from the world, you go through a little RF amplifier, and then you go through a mixer. But it's not our traditional diode ring mixer. This is a chip, Bill. I'm sorry. It's a switch. It's a logic chip that is driven by an SI5351 in quadrature. So you've got the signals 90 degree out of phase on one clock and the other clock, and it produces in phase and quadrature output, which goes through a little amplifier that goes into a PC sound card. And then Pete, your recommendation, we're going to use the QISC software to receive and tune the radio. We got a Raspberry Pi Pico in there. Its function is very simple. Send the right commands to the SI5351 so that it can tune. And that is the architecture of a front-end SDR receiver. Now, we are trying not to make this the perfect receiver, but to make it an adequate receiver so that our guys can build it. But in addition to building this, we're going to learn how to use KiCad to lay out the circuit, then lay out the PCB, then send the files off to China and get our PCBs created. Then when we get them in, we're going to have a build day and we're going to solder these things up. And we're using surface mount components, but the big ones that you can solder with a pencil, not the ones that you need that you could inhale because they're grain of rice size.
1208, the 1208 size.
Yep, 1206, 1208, so that we can get something that we can actually work on. And so our guys are going to get the opportunity to see this design go from this block diagram all the way through sitting in my garage shack here in a month or so and wiring these things up. And hopefully we'll have a bunch of these things built. Do not send me emails asking for schematics and all that because we haven't got any of that yet. But when it's ready, I'll have it up on the Vienna Wireless Society Maker page, and I'll post a link for people to look at. And people want to build this, they can do that as well.
You know, we talked about this on the VWS Makers Group the other night, and I just commented that, you know, it might be surprising to newer hams, but the basic architecture that you see on this share that Dean is showing is similar to the phasing rigs of days gone by. I have an HT37 transmitter here on the bench. It was built in 1959, and it too uses quadrature from the VFO to produce I and Q, and that's how they get the opposite sideband rejection. And on the receive side, which is much more similar to, what's more similar to this is the are the rigs that were put out by Rick Campbell back 20, 25 years ago on how to build a phasing receiver, and it does the same thing. Now the innovation here is that you're getting quadrature from the SI5351, which is really, really a major breakthrough.
Hey Dean, a couple comments. The that chip, the 3253, that's commonly known as the Talo detector or Talo encoder from Dan Talo, and it really is. Those chips are very inexpensive, and it's just a really great idea. And the other thing is the way that they built the Sofroc uses the same type of architecture, the Sofroc transceivers, and it uses two of the Talo chips. One is on transmit, one is receive. So this was just the receive section. Now, when I built an SDR, I went to the diode ring because they're bidirectional, so I wouldn't have to do two. But you have to deal with some noise issues if you use the diode ring, and I'm talking about AC noise. So I had to put some modem transformers in there. But you won't get that problem with the Talo detector.
Isn't,
So,
is is there also an issue with getting the phase exactly right when you're using the diode rings?
well, yeah, there's a little on the front end of it. You have to have a splitter so that you're taking the output, the each you got two ADE ones, and you have a splitter so that you get the 90 degree shift there, and you get the 90 degree shift there. The other thing is, what's kind of nifty is an alternative to driving it with the driver is you could use the seed to drive the SI5351 to give the quadrature. But the other thing too is when I loaded Quisk on a Raspberry Pi Pico, it struggled because you just didn't have enough RAM. It's only got 512.
We're not going to put Quisk on the Raspberry Pi. The Pico is just to drive the SI5351.
Ah, okay.
The Quisk
Okay,
is
I'll
going to be
say,
on
man,
a Quisk is going to be on a PC.
I actually loaded Quisk on the Pico, but man,
Probably the Zero. The Pico doesn't have an operating system, right? The Pico is just a microcontroller.
I'm sorry, the Zero W,
Yeah.
what I used, and boy, it really struggled with that.
Yeah, so our idea is to have this all packaged up as a unit and then just plug it in USB into your PC and
So
run Quisk there.
the seed and the SI5351 could be replaced with the replace the Pico and the seed. I don't know what you get the Pico for, but the seeds are about $5.
Yeah, the Pico is about four. So it's we had our makers meeting and we walked through this architecture and we had very many off this simple diagram. We probably spent about a half hour talking about alternatives that we could make, replacing the differential amplifiers, maybe using a different mixer. Do we really need that high-end amplifier? And I just kept coming back to the fact that we're building a very simple radio here. This is actually the circuit out of the T41 that works. So we know everything works. And then Oliver, our guy who's doing the build here, he's like, I know the Raspberry Pi Pico. I already have the libraries. I'm ready to go. And I'm like, we're using
There you go. There you
the
go. You're all set. You're all set. Oh, cool. No, that's a wonderful project, 'cause then that what's immediately going to happen once you do that, the guy says, "Okay, let's build the transmitter."
Yeah, and
But
it's
you
just a couple of
duplicate the
boards.
circuitry. You duplicate the circuitry with some switching in there, and you got a transceiver.
All right, so even though I've been on travel most of the last month, I had a little bit to share. So that's it from KK4DAS, Bill.
Thank you very much, Dean. Really interesting stuff as always. Dean, and now it's time before we forget. Pete always reminds me, what do we do now?
Shameless Commerce Division.
It's time for
Shameless
the
Commerce.
Shameless Commerce Division here. First of all, I want to plug mostly DIY RF, our friend out in Portland, Todd K7TFC. You could get a link to his site on the Solder Smoke blog in the right-hand column. Check it out. All kinds of good parts, good boards, good kits, good stuff. Mostly DIY RF. Check it out. Also, on the YouTube channel that we're making more use of because we're doing the video on this podcast, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. You could be a subscriber. Also, use the Amazon link on our blog. If you want to buy anything, especially, a high-end, anything really expensive, even mundane stuff, you could do it. Just charge it there. Bezos will send us a little bit of money, speaking of billionaires. Become a patron via Patreon on the blog. I've been sending some kind of unique videos to the blog to the Patreon users there, and I hope that we're making it worthwhile, but we definitely appreciate all the support from the Patreon users. There are costs involved in this. We run into them when we have to pay for for example, the ISP or the web hosting service that we pay. We just recently got a rather large bill from them, so we were able to take it out of there. We have to pay for, paying for the Zoom link, the Zoom subscription that we have here. All that comes out of the Patreon fund. So anyway, we really appreciate the support there. One thing I'd like to point out, Solder Smoke, we're now on Blue Sky and Threads. These are two new kind of internet messaging services, Blue Sky and Threads. So you can follow us or like us there, and there seems to be a lot of promise there. One thing we talked a little bit about how to increase the listenership, and a good friend, Jack F4WEF AI4SV, sent us some good thoughts on how to bolster the solder smoke hit count. Please turn on automatic downloads on your podcast apps. If you're getting the podcast from an app, you could turn on automatic downloads. Most podcast apps will store only a few episodes, but if you put on automatic downloads for Solder Smoke, it'll bump up the numbers, which will improve visibility. On these apps, please give the show 5 stars and impossible a nice if possible a nice review. That'll help with the discovery rate for people looking for new podcasts. So we'll get to the mailbag in a second here.
Well, before you leave,
Oh
Shameless
yeah.
Commerce Division, you know what I have right here, Bill, is a test lead from Parts Candy, and
There you go.
these are
That's it.
wonderful. These are wonderful test leads. It's hard to get excited about a test lead, but I get excited about these. These are real wires. These are not fake wires.
Not fake wires, not fake wires from China. Yeah.
By the way, Bill, I used my Parts Candy jumper to jumper across the switch so I could turn on my KWM2.
That's my band switch. That's my band switch for my tuner.
I got a lot of band switches up here hanging on the wall. Yeah, it's good. All right. I guess it's time for the portion where we talk about what's on my bench. One thing I wanted to start with is a rather surprising video appeared on YouTube from an ARRL vice president. And the title, which is obviously designed to be provocative, maybe a bit of clickbait, is that ground is a myth. There is no such thing as ground. Ground is a myth. I don't know. I've been a ham radio operator for less time than Pete, but I think people who've been around for a while find that kind of, well, shocking. And I looked at it. Dean and I talked about this quite a bit, and I just disagree with the idea that the idea of ground is a myth. I think it's for real. And I started thinking about examples in my own life about how I came to understand ground as a real thing. All voltages are referencing ground. If we say something has a charge of 120 volts, that's a reference to ground. And one of the things that for me is the most kind of the I guess the best example of how the ground is not a myth is that when you're flying in a helicopter, the rotary blades will be creating charge on the helicopter. There'll be a large charge buildup on the helicopter. The helicopter gets close to the ground and you've got to sling load something underneath it. You jump off the helicopter, and then with your feet on the ground, you reach up and you grab the helicopter. Not a good move because it will discharge through you into the ground. Unless you ground the helicopter first, attach a ground cable, then hook up the sling load, then disconnect, then get back on the helicopter, then you're okay. So that was the other thing. And the other thing that came to mind is the refrigerator story. You know, in the Dominican Republic, refrigerators often will have, like on the handle, a cloth towel. And nobody grabs the refrigerator door by the door when you're standing there in your bare feet on the concrete floor and everything's kind of wet. Because the problem is, if you grab that handle, you're liable to create a ground connection. And many people have been electrocuted just trying to open up the refrigerator door. And finally, I sent Dina a picture of one of the original wire telegraphs. And this was really quite interesting. It was a single wire system. They just ran one wire along. And on the transmit end, they had a ground stake going in. On the receive end, they had a ground stake going in. So in effect, the ground served as the second wire. Dean and I were surprised to find that single wire systems are in use throughout the world, including throughout the United States. And there's a really interesting page about that. So anyway, I disagreed with the ARRL VP about ground being a myth. Anyway. Call me an old fogey, but there I am. I put up a video about putting a front panel and a frequency counter on MythBuster 2. I built a second version of the MythBuster transceiver because I missed it down in the Dominican Republic. We were down there, and I just missed having this sort of MythBuster rig there. One thing I particularly like about it is the VFO that comes out of the Yaesu FT-101. which I continue to buy. Pete is like the pusher of FT-101 VFOs. He sends me these messages. It says, look at this one. And boom, eBay, click, click, click. And next thing you know, I have like eight of these things, Pete. Keep sending them. I don't have to buy them. I'm glad you'd send them.
Hey, Dean, there's that same VFO listed again for $30.
Oh man, I thought Bill had bought all the
No,
$30
no,
ones.
no,
They
no,
only
no.
got 80.
There you go.
There's one listed on eBay for $30.
Welcome to my world, Dean.
And it has another feature. It has the two dial plates. It has the large macro level gradient and then the 1 kilohertz readout. $30.
Oh man.
Anyway, I put a front panel on it, just a piece of plywood. I got some 1/8 inch plywood from Amazon. And it fits. I was able to cut it out and put it on there. I was able to use a little Dremel-like tool to cut out a little rectangular hole. I did include a Sanjian frequency counter in there, which goes against all my principles, but I decided, well, okay, I'll do it. But I cut out another hole so I could see the actual, the tuning dial of the FT-101. So I kind of console myself by saying, yeah, I can look at the glowing numerals, but I don't have to. I can look there. See, and so that's my excuse there. I have a tale of woe to share with you guys, similar to Pete's tale of woe with the light bulb in the TR3. Our listeners love it when we share tales of woe. So here's another tale of woe. So I was working on the 1510 rig, which is another dual bander that I made, and I'm working on it. And what I wanted to do is the 1510 rig does not have a glowing numerals on the front, and it doesn't even have a light bulb on it. So it doesn't even have like an LED. So I often forget when I have the thing turned on. So I figured, well, I'm just going to put a little LED on the front panel, but I didn't want to drill holes in the front panel for the same reason that Pete doesn't want to drill holes in his KWM2. So I decided, the speaker that I have has one of these kind of transparent cones, a plastic transparent cone. I picked them up at the garage sale that Dean and Vivian Wireless Society set up a couple of summers ago. And I figured what I'll do is I'll just hang an LED behind it. So the red light will kind of shine out through the speaker. And Bob will be my uncle, and I'll be able to just look at the front panel of the rig. And if I see red light coming out from the speaker, I know it's turned on. It's kind of an innovative solution. So I'm working on this thing, and I get it all set up, and then I set up the transceiver. And a couple of days later, I'm listening to it, and it doesn't sound right. It just sounds terrible. This is a rig that used to sound great, and it just doesn't anymore. The SSB, the voice signals are all kind of scratchy, crappy sounding, and I'm just thinking, what is wrong with this thing? So I start poking around in it. I start looking at the audio amplifiers. Did something go wrong with the audio amplifier and the thing? Did something go wrong with the product detector? Everything else? Nope. You know what it was? It was the plastic speaker cone. When I was putting the diode in there, I let the hot soldering iron get too close to the plastic, and it kind of melted it. I couldn't see
Oh.
it. I couldn't see it. But it was no longer the conical cone that it was supposed to be. And sure enough, that's what did me in. That's what made the audio sound bad, was that I had disturbed and distorted the plastic speaker cone. So I just popped that speaker out and I put in another, kind of cardboard speaker cone that was standard kind. I didn't put the soldering iron anywhere near close to it, and boom, it sounded good again. Bob was my uncle. So Pete was done in by a light bulb. I was done in by a plastic speaker cone. These are tales of woe, tales of woe, my friend. one other thing, one thing I want to mention. Pete, I think we have found a cure for the fat finger syndrome. Brace yourself, my friend. The Tiny SA. Tiny SA has a way that you could hook up the Tiny SA and not be looking at this tiny little screen. The screen, even though it's a bigger screen on the Tiny SA Ultra, it's still pretty small. You could get it so you run Tiny SA app, the app they call Tiny SA Windows app. And I've got links of it up on the blog. And boom, your computer screen has a much better display. So when you're trying to use the Tiny SA to determine what your IMD products look like. Boom, you got a better display. It's nicer. And Pete, you don't have to worry about hitting the thing with your numbers, your fingers. You've got the whole keyboard, my friend. So the links are there, how to set it up, how to use it. I was really pleased with it. Finally, for the DR Shack, the other thing I noticed that on our previous visit that I needed down there at Solder Smoke Shack South was a better kind of power SWR meter. Now, some of these things can be really expensive. If you want to buy like a really expensive power meter or SWR meter, you could spend a few $100 on one of these things. That's a lot more than I need, a lot more than I have here. So I went to eBay and I found a Swan SWR1A, which is kind of a dual little meter. It was the whole thing was like $35. So I got it and I have it in the bag and I'll take it down to the DR with me when we go down there and I'll set it up. And I will be able to know roughly how much power I'm putting out and what my SWR looks like. That's my contribution for the week, guys. I think unless anybody has any comments, I think we can go right to the mailbag. All right, Solder Smoke mailbag. We're on almost on overtime here now soon. First, Scott, KQ4 AOP, a guy who built the high school direct conversion receiver, really built it and sent a video, admirable stuff. And he was also trying to track down the DeMaw single sideband transceiver mystery. But on the DC receiver, he writes to us, and this was really cool. He said, "This was my first receiver build, and it was great fun. When you finish the build and prove you're able to tune through the band, you are welcome into the secret society." That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
The secret society. The build, the, his, this is the key line. The build is the initiation. The build is the initiation. That's right. He captures a lot right there. I am happy to print and ship the PTO if needed. This is a very useful resource. A lot of guys tell us, "Oh yeah, I want to build the high school receiver, but I don't have a 3D printer. I don't know how to make the coil form for the main tuning inductor." Well, Scott, KQ4 AOP, whose email address is on the Solder Smoke blog and whose mailing address is also on QRZ.com, has offered to print one out and send one to you. So get in touch with him. Bill, WA5DSS, also built the high school direct conversion receiver, sent us a video, and instead of using a plywood base or a wooden base, he used a pizza box. And Dean and I said, "Man, it sounds great." He's working on it. I hope he's going to send us an improved video, maybe a horizontal video, maybe with actual bandpass filter in there. But really, congratulations, Bill. Somebody else has built the
He
high school direct conversion
was
receiver.
embarrassed by how ugly his construction looks,
I
and we
know.
said, "Oh no, it's a thing of
It
beauty."
is a thing of
And
beauty. The uglier, the better. Yes,
it
indeed.
is no uglier than any rig we've ever built.
We heard from our good friend Grayson KJ7UM, author of Hollow State Design. He liked the 1971 video that I put on the blog on Thermatron AM radios. I've got the link to that video on the show notes here and on the Solder Smoke Blogspot page. Chris KD4PBJ sent an extremely generous electronic care package to me, and he will be sending similar packages, smaller perhaps, to Dean and Pete. Enough said about that, but thank you very much, Chris. Walter KA4KXX. Walter is honored that Dean has named his dog for him. We know that Walter in Orlando, KA4KXX, is kidding, but
And if you were listening to the last podcast, you heard Walter in the background. He has not joined us today, but
Walter frequently joins in the podcast, yeah. And we're talking about Walter of Great Falls, not Walter of Atlanta, Orlando. Thanks to Bob W8SX for FDIM 2024 interviews. We put the one up by about a Farhan. It's already up on the blog. Tony G4WIF. He deals with insomnia by listening to podcasts. I think that's good news and it's bad news. It's good news if the podcasts are useful. It's bad news if we put people to sleep. But I guess Tony's okay, and he's amazed. We already mentioned he's amazed by the quantity of food eaten by Americans on Thanksgiving. It is quite amazing. We got a nice comment from Trigger about the podcast. Clint wrote in, and he doesn't like the term thermotrons. We get a lot of people who don't like the term thermotrons. I think some of them are from the United Kingdom. Clint says he prefers valves, and he likes the term valves. And of course, Grayson doesn't like valves. Valve is what you have that turns on the hose in the backyard, right?
Valves are
No.
for the toilet feed.
Yeah,
Yes.
valves are for plumbers. Thermotrons are for radio amateurs. This is sort of like menus are for restaurants, libraries are for books. Valves are for plumbers. Okay. But Clint makes a good comment. He kindly asks, what happened to my son Billy's comment about, ooh, that's awesome? And Maria chimes in with, ciao, bravi ragazzi. These are like blasts from the past. We haven't been using them lately because we've been just recording here on Zoom, but I will get them back on here one of these days. Thank you for thinking about that. You know, on a much more serious note here now, our good friend Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, is facing a new health challenge. And he's talked about it openly on his QSO Today podcast and on blogs. All we can say is, Eric, we hope you get well soon, old man. We hope you beat this one and continue to turn out QSO Today podcasts. It's always fun when we see one of your podcasts show up on the news feed. Sam WN5C said that he sometimes, when he has a question that he would normally use, that he would normally ask his Elmer about, but when the question sort of pops into his head at 3 a.m., and he knows he can't immediately turn to his Elmer, he turns to ChatGPT and asks ChatGPT, the AI, the question. And Clint has been very, very pleased with the quality of the answers that he gets back from ChatGPT. So thanks for sharing that with us, Sam. Paul, VK3HN, has been using AI for electronic design. I told, and Dean and I have been talking about this quite a bit. I told Paul that I kind of have my doubts. Sometimes they'll get it right. Maybe they get it right more often than not in the area of electronic design. But I have found some pretty glaring mistakes, that mistakes that are just on the internet that the AI just picks up because they're on the internet. You know, so for example, were portions of the Apocalypse Now movie filmed in the Dominican Republic? You'll find all over the internet people saying yes. It's not true, not true at all. But then if you ask the AI about it, AI will also say yes because they got it from the internet. So anyway, interesting AI stories there. Tommy, Sugar Alpha 2, Charlie Lima Charlie, SA2 CLC Tommy, has really, really very fine business, old military gear on his QRZ site. And he helped somebody with their repair of a Hewlett Packard 8640B signal generator, one of which I have sitting right behind me over here. Thanks. Good to hear from you, Tommy. Mike, WN2A. Mike made some nice comments about another direct conversion receiver that we featured. And this is the direct conversion receiver built by a YouTuber who goes by the name Chappy Happy. Chappy Happy. We have no identification information on who Chappy Happy is, but he seems like he's in Japan. And he also describes the receiver as Tezukuri DC receiver. Tezukuri in Japanese apparently means handmade. So Tezukuri, all that stuff behind Pete, right behind on his, and all the stuff that Dean has shown and I have shown, it's all Tezukuri. And I really like the direct conversion receiver that Chappy Happy built, and I have a link to it on the blog and on the on this page too. You can check it out. It's really quite nice. It's amazing when you see a direct conversion receiver being built. He also built an S meter for an audio derived S meter for this direct conversion receiver, which is a nice touch. Heard
I'm
from
looking
Al.
at Chappy Happy's YouTube page. He also has a cardboard pinball machine with score counter.
It's a Japanese thing. See, yeah, good. Then there's we heard from Allison KB1 GMX. Always great to hear from her. Got some good info on all kinds of technical material from Allison. Phil W1 PJE. Man, this one was very appropriate to what you guys were just talking about. After we did our story about the fake wires from China, Phil went out and tested his test leads, and he had to throw away 15 of them. They were all iron. Fake wires. Todd, K7TFC provided some very thoughtful comments on AI and ChatGPT, and he offered some help with our implementation of the Tiny Essay app for the computer that I mentioned before. Steve KW4H is a boat anchor guy, and he said that he likes that the three of us are often seen scratching our heads about problems and talking about how we scratched our heads and then talking about tales of woe. And that is important, because it's important for newcomers to homebrew to realize that this is not for the faint of heart, that nobody gets it all right the first time. I guess that's
It's
good news and bad news there, friends.
the journey, not the destination.
That's it. There you go. Nick M0NTV built a 40-meter direct conversion receiver, and the video that he put out is on there. That's up there. Very good. Dave AA0KU is also building an AN762 amplifier from Communications Concept, and he also works on Drake rigs, and so a lot of commonality with Pete. I hope his light bulb in the TR3 has not given him the same problems you have, Pete. If it is, he's forewarned. We heard about from Jack Welch, AI4SV, also known as Foxtrot 4 Whiskey Echo Foxtrot, also known as Daka Jack. We call him Daka Jack. He's an old VWS club member, and he provided good thoughts on how to bolster Solder Smoke's ratings. Tobias talks about the decline in ratings, and Tobias wrote to us, and Tobias just admits that he thinks it's all his fault. So I agreed. I said, if we need to find out who it is, it's not Google, it's not the demographics, it's Tobias. There you go.
But Tobias, if you turn on the auto download, you're
You'll be
absolved.
making up for the whole thing. Tony VE7JUL is building the high school direct conversion receiver. He's another Canadian. Many Canadians have taken up this challenge. There seems to be kind of a disproportionate number of Canadians building this receiver. Go Canada is all I say. And Dean ex told him on how to print out the PTO former and do it at 10%, at 110%. That way the nuts will fit in the
Yeah,
proper place.
the original design was done for those metric people in the other parts of the world. So you got to scale it up 10% to put a 1/4 by 20 brass nut.
We got an email from Jim. Jim is here locally, and he is a member of Vienna Wireless Society, and I have been appointed as his Elmer. And he's got a really amazing call sign, KI4THC. KI4THC. That's going to attract a lot of attention, Jim. And he is getting his Ubidex, his MicroBidex, on the air. And I'm happy to help him with that. And we're going to get it going. He's got the receiver working fine. He's got an SWR meter on the way. And we should have this his him on the air with the MicroBidex very shortly. Finally, one comment. I just. This didn't come as mail. It was more of an on-the-air contact that I made. So on November 23rd, 2024, I was on 10-meter sideband with the homebrew rig. It was 1517 Zulu, and I contacted Costas, Sugar Victor 1 Alpha Echo Romeo in Athens. And it was a very nice conversation. We were talking, and then I just mentioned to him that my rig was homebrew, and that I was putting out about 100 watts to hex beam, but I emphasized, I said the rig is home brew, and immediately Costas came back with a very sincere comment. He said, quote, "Oh my goodness, congratulations, that is not a very common thing." Now that's the kind of response that really is appropriate and pleasing. It's very gracious. It's very sincere. I mean, you could tell from the tone of his voice that he was an old timer, and that he hadn't heard somebody say this in a long time, but he was genuinely pleased. I seem to get this more from overseas amateurs than I do from US amateurs. From the US amateurs, you'll also get like, "Yeah, but did you design it yourself?" "Well, I'd do that, but I don't have the I have an important job, so I don't do
Sounds
that.
okay for a homebrew rig.
Sounds okay for a homebrew rig, that kind of stuff. Anyway, we thank very much Kostas SV1AER for his very kind and appropriate comments. Guys, we're at 1 hour 25 minutes. We go any further, we'll be, in way overtime, triple overtime. Thanks very much. Any final comments from anybody?
Yeah, I had one about ChatGPT. Sometimes you never get an answer. Like I posed the simple question. I said, "Tell me, do blondes have more fun?" And it came back, says, "We don't comment on stuff like
Pete
that."
is breaking ChatGPT with his questions
The
like this.
content filter is working. Well, yeah, just I mean, last thing, it's last show of the year. We got the holidays coming up. I got my Christmas tie on. Bill's got his Christmas hat on. Best holiday wishes to whatever holiday you celebrate or whatever holiday you don't celebrate.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy
See you
holidays.
in the new year.
Seven
All
and
right,
threes from the left coast.
Seven
Seven three
threes
from
from
Great
Northern
Fayette
Virginia.
Falls.
Seven and
All
seven
right.
threes from Great Falls out there. Seven threes, guys. Thanks a lot.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.